All right, so I'm going to start off with a quote today. The author is Mr. Danan Katagiri. He is an author. He's not a Christian author. However, I found his quote to be relevant. Quote is, "You cannot find any peace by escaping from human pain and suffering. You have to find peace and harmony right in the midst of human pain. That is the purpose of spiritual life." So today I will be talking about trials by breaking them down into three different stages: before, during, and after. The goal of this sermonette is to relay what is required of us through each of these stages as I have come to see it. The first stage is before the trial. This is what we are doing right now. That is why we are here together, teaching and being taught about God's truth, His mercy, and His plan of salvation. Before the trial is where we have to build our relationship with God and His teachings so that He can help us build the strength to maintain the attitude of an overcomer. Although there's much more to the story of Job, his attitude at the onset of his great trial is nothing short of mind-blowing. If you can turn to Job chapter 1, verse 20. If you recall, while you're turning there, Job had just heard at the beginning of the book, one after another, the reports of messengers bringing him news that all that he loved, owned, and held dear was no more. In the face of this devastating news, we start off in verse 20. Job 1, verse 20, out of the New King James Version. "Then Job arose, tore his robe, and shaved his head, fell on the ground and worshipped. And he said, 'Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked shall I return there. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord.'" It's sobering just to read that, but trust like this in the wisdom of God's hand in our lives is only possible through terrific effort on our part to allow God's Spirit into our lives. We come to the second stage, during the trial. The Bible teaches us that the key to surviving trials is trusting God and believing that He knows what's best. Certainly this is easier said than done, but the required attitude is built into the framework of something we all know very well. Matthew 6, verses 9 through 13 is the Lord's Prayer. So we all know it. We don't need to turn there, but I'll go ahead and read it. "In this manner, therefore pray: Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts, as we forgive our debtors. Do not lead us into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. For yours is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen." So as I encountered more trials in my life, I find myself fixating on the words in the Lord's Prayer, the words, "Your will be done." More and more I find myself going there as I face trials. It's an exercise in humility, recognizing both that some things are completely out of my control, but of course well within God's control, and that there may be plans at play that surpass my understanding. I just do not have the wisdom and the perspective to understand what's going on. So then we come to the third, after the trial. This is where the trials become wounds. The event is over, but the pain remains. Or you could say the tornado has passed, but we are left picking up the pieces. They say that time heals all wounds, but does it? Let me give you a few examples from my life. These are people that I know personally. One is a gentleman named David. I met David when we, shortly after we had moved to Arkansas. He came to me because he was training for a marathon. This was to be his second marathon. His first marathon, he had trained for months. Really excited. I mean, this guy was hardcore. He was all the way invested. And he trained, and then on the day of the race, he was just giving it his all, stretching out, you know, long strides, and ended up having his family help him walk across the line because amidst all sorts of unpleasant bodily... I won't get into details, but he had fractured his pelvis, and he was in immense pain. Just because, and it was a muscular issue that he had pushed his body to the point that he had, you know, put himself in that position. Well, when he came to see me, he was in the midst of training for a second marathon, and I could, in the midst of an assessment, I came to the realization that he was going to repeat. So, the lesson from David and how we apply it in our lives is, how many times do we suffer wounds that come back to haunt us from our past that are made worse by the fact that we have acted over time as though it was healed and behind us? The second example is a gentleman named Edward. Edward was my dad. This is a story about my dad that actually I didn't tell my mom until pretty recently. My dad passed in 2005. It didn't even really occur to me until probably a couple of years ago. This story, Dad was down, we had a boiler furnace, and he was fixing it in the basement of our house. This is in South Dakota. And he came up sweating profusely. I was just in the living room, and he asked me to come down and help him with something. He had a couple pipe wrenches on a pipe, and he wanted me to break it loose. He couldn't get it. I went to break it loose, and it was just nothing. I mean, it was barely fastened, which I thought was strange, but and that happened. Situations like that happened going throughout the remainder of his life, and we didn't put together the pieces until afterwards. He was having a heart attack at that point when he asked for my help, and that happened several other times, but he ignored it. So as that relates to us, you know, what happens if we have a wound and it's not treated, dressed, and recuperated? It gets worse, attacks, and destroys the entire body. The third and last example is a gentleman named Harlan. Harlan was my stepfather. He was an elder in the church, local congregation. His wife had passed, and he and my mother got married. And about 2 months later, he was diagnosed with stage 4 liver cancer. They got several first opinion, second opinion, third opinion from physicians. And what it came down to was he really didn't have any options. He made it about a year and a half where he and my mother were able to try to live their best life in the closing portion of his life. But he did succumb to his sickness. As this relates to us, how many wounds are subtle, like a cancer, starting and growing when we live out our lives unaware, then one day is discovered, only to realize that the time for action has come and gone, and we must pay for our ignorance with our life. I chose these examples to demonstrate a few tendencies that we as human often allow to sabotage the healing process. David didn't take his wounds seriously. My dad ignored his wounds. And my stepfather didn't even know he was wounded until it was too late. But time, I think we can say with certainty, that time does not heal wounds. Time shows whether or not we have properly treated our wounds. To conclude, we've briefly discussed dealing with trials during, before, during, and after. If you think back, you will notice that all three stages require doing. Building our relationship with God now, before the trial. Trusting God during the trial. And properly dealing with our wounds after the trial. Taking an active role in our own healing is our responsibility. Both in prayerful petition to God for his help, as well as humbly facing the realities in our life that are now different as a result of the trial. Because healing, air quotes, healing, is not returning to how and who we were before. It is becoming someone we have never been, someone stronger, someone wiser, someone kinder. Healing is our responsibility, because if it isn't, an unfair circumstance becomes an unlived life. At some point, you stop being a victim of your circumstances and become a victim of your own inability to trust God and earnestly seek healing. It's not comfortable, and it's not easy, but this we know. We can do all things through Christ who strengthens us.